Isaiah 58, verses 1 to 9, so far soon. Below says, shout as loud as you can, tell my people Israel about your sins. They worship me as we die, claiming that you're eager to know my ways and obey my laws. They say you want me to give them death laws, and yet to take pleasure in worshipping me. The people ask, why should we fast if the Lord never notices? Why should we go without food if you paid no attention? But Lord says to them, the truth is that at the same time as you fast, you pursue your own interests and oppress the workers. The fasting makes you violent and you quarrel and fight. Do you think this kind of fasting might be listening to your prayers? When you fast, you make yourself suffer. You bow your head below like a blade of grass and spread out sackcloth and ask you to lie on. Is that what you call fasting? Do you think I will be pleased with that? The kind of fasting I want is this. Be more restrained to oppression and be yoked with injustice. And let my oppressed go free. Say your food with the hungry and open your home to the homeless, poor. Give clothes to those who have nothing to wear, and do not be fools to help your own relatives. Then my favour will shine on you like the morning sun, and your wounds will be quickly healed. I will always be with you to save you. My presence will protect you and at your side. When you pray, I will answer you. When you call to me, I will respond. Matthew 5, verses 14 to 20. Seeing light. You are that salt for the whole human race. But if salt loses its saltness, there is no way to make it salty again. It has become worthless, but it is thrown out and people trample on it. You are like light for the whole city, the whole world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a bowl. Instead, he puts it on the lampstand where it gives light for everyone in the house. In the same way, your light must shine before people, so that you receive the good things you do and pray to Father in heaven. Teaching about the law. Do not think that I come to do any away with the law of Moses and the teaching of the prophets. I have not come to do away with them, but to make your teaching come true. Remember that as long as heaven and earth last, not the least point nor the smallest detail of the law will be done away with, not until the end of all things. So again, whoever disobeys even the least important of commandments and teaches the others to do the same, will be least in the kingdom of heaven. On the other hand, whoever obeys the law and teaches the others to do the same, will be great in the kingdom of heaven. I tell you again, that you will be able to enter the kingdom of heaven only if you are more faithful than the teachers of the law and the Pharisees in doing what God requires.
It's just a reading now by an unknown author. From what's written in the reading, you can tell it was written about 100 years ago. I thought it was quite an interesting perspective. A man was born in an obscure village, the child of a peasant woman. He grew up in another village. He worked as a carpenter until he was 30, and then for 3 years he was an itinerant preacher. He never owned his own home, never wrote a book, never held high office, never had a family, never went to college, never put his foot inside a big city, and never travelled more than 200 miles from the place he was born. He never did any one of the things that usually accompany greatness, He had no credentials but himself. While still a young man, the tide of popular opinion turned against him. His friends ran away, and one of them denied him. He was turned over to his enemies. He went through the mockery of a trial. He was nailed upon a cross between two thieves. While he was dying, his executioners gambled for the only piece of property he had on earth, his coat. When he was dead, he was taken down and laid in a borrowed grave through the pity of a friend. 19 long centuries have come and gone, and today he is the centerpiece of the human race and the leader of a column of progress. I am far within the mark when I say that all the armies that ever marched, all the navies that were ever built, all the parliaments that ever sat, and all the kings that ever reigned put together have not affected the life of man upon this earth as powerfully as has that one solitary life. From the readings and from the hymns we've had, this morning's theme by now is probably quite obvious. It's two themes, really. The impossibility of concealing a true discipleship from people around us, and fulfilling the spirit and purpose of the law rather than just merely the letter of it. The light of God reveals hypocrisy where it exists and shows the way to living out your relationship with God and with our fellow human beings in the world for all to see. Our Old Testament reading from Isaiah 58. Now, some of you might realise Isaiah is split into three, isn't it? It's quite a chunky book, Isaiah. So they split it into three, first, second and third Isaiah. And our reading this morning is from the third bit. It's a daunting reading for both the prophet and for the people, saying that Isaiah is to proclaim people's offences in full and in public. They are hypocrites, as they have observed the ceremonies of the law, but fail to put it into practice. The prophet denounces their hypocrisy and weighs in with God's demands. Fulfillment of the law means liberating the oppressed and helping the poor, not just paying lip service to it. And these demands are accompanied by promises of joy and prosperity, the restoration of Judah, and God's continual guiding presence. In other words, the prophet is holding out to the people yet another chance of renewing their covenant relationship with God. But the people should be aware that they don't have to turn to false gods to be in breach of the covenant. It's just as bad to go through the motions of worship, say they'll help the poor and the homeless and all the people that need their help, and then never practice it. These things of justice and compassion are fundamental to shalom, God's peace, and they will breach the covenant in that way as much as they would by turning to false gods. So that's quite a hefty challenge for them. Our New Testament reading is a section of the Sermon on the Mount, comes just after the Beatitudes, or the Blessed Are, the very famous piece that I'm sure most of you know. And there are some important teachings in our reading this morning about discipleship. We're told to be what we truly are, not to make out with something that we're not, not to hide away when we're a bit embarrassed or challenged by what we should be. We're told to be the salt of the earth. Now, when someone says, oh, he's a really, really nice bloke, he's the salt of the earth, usually means that someone's a good and reliable person, doesn't it, in this day and age? But to Matthew, it meant far more. Salt was probably more important in biblical times than it is now, remembering, of course, they didn't have fridges and freezers to keep all their food fresh like we do, so everything used to be preserved with salt. It's interesting that the Greek phrase, which is translated as lost its taste, also means, quite literally when it's translated, become foolish. So that's quite an interesting way of looking at it, isn't it? We're fools if we believe that we're true disciples when we're not. I'm sure you're aware you don't just put salt on your food. I mean, you're not supposed to put too much salt on your food in this day and age, are you? Because it's bad for your blood pressure and all sorts of things. But it adds flavour and it's quite a nice thing to do. I personally don't do it, but I know lots of people do. Does anyone else think of any other uses of salt that they use salt for, or salt's used to make our lives easier? Stephen? Gritting the roads, yes. You're very thankful for that. If, like me, you've got hypermobile joints and you trip over fresh air, that when it's icy, they put a bit of grit on the road. That's very helpful, isn't it? Anyone, when they've got a tooth problem, an abscess, or just had a tooth out, wash their mouth out with hot, salty water to keep it clean. So it's used to cleanse as well, isn't it, salt? As well as to preserve. So it's quite an important thing. Also, you need a certain amount of salt, don't you, in your body to keep you going. I know if you let your salt levels get too low, it can be quite dangerous, can't it? So it's vital to keep us alive as well. So light, the light of the world. We've not that long past Christmas, and we hear about Jesus being the light of the world a lot, don't we, during Advent and Christmas. Particularly if you go to a service like Christingle. And we often have, don't we, at Christmas, the reading, the very beginning piece of John's Gospel, with the word Jesus being referred to as a light, a lot in that reading. But in our reading today, Jesus states that his disciples are the light of the world. A lamp is no good if you can't see it. And if we hide our discipleship, it's like putting a lamp under a blanket. Completely useless. And there's also the thought as well, isn't there, that if you've switched it on and then cover it, you're wasting energy, aren't you? How many times do we waste energy in doing something and it's not quite the right thing that needs to be done? It's like wasting the electricity of the lamp, isn't it, and it not shining out right. Matthew was writing after Jesus' death. And he urged people not to mourn Jesus as the light of the world, but to be the light of the world themselves. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither can true discipleship. You can't choose when and where to witness. I know from personal experience, sometimes it's when you're really busy and someone asks you about your faith and you think, oh, I really haven't got... But you have to make time, don't you, to sit with them and to... help them. In my over half a century on this planet, I've only come across about half a dozen people, I can say, whose faith literally shines out of them. I don't know if anyone else has ever met people like that. They're quite rare, these people. The last one of these people I met was a lady I worked with about 15 years ago. And the minute I met her, somehow I could tell she was a really devout Christian. It just shone out of her. Her whole life and her whole being, demeanour, you could tell that she was a really true Christian. Has anyone else ever met anyone like that? No? And Sylvia has. I'm sure in your line of work you came across many people like that. The images of salt and light are underpinned by Jesus' teaching about the law. One of Matthew's main concerns is to affirm the validity of the law by emphasising Jesus didn't abolish these laws, but instead he fulfilled it. And he was the first and only person ever to do so. And then he went above it, he transcended it. It's no use being obedient to the letter of the law if you don't fulfil its spirit and purpose. So this is going back to Isaiah, with the hypocrisy bit that we heard in Isaiah. The reading ends by stating that the righteousness of the disciples must exceed that of the teachers and leaders, as their lives were so dedicated to fulfilling the letter of the law that they often failed to fulfill its spirit and purpose. They were too busy dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's to go out and actually do the good that they were supposed to be doing. Only by going out and doing the good work, though, can we participate in the kingdom of heaven here and now, as well as in the future? I'm not an artist, I can't draw very, but I do appreciate good art. And every year I try to go to the summer exhibition at the Royal Academy because it's a great variety of different artworks and it's quite an interesting thing to go and have a look at. One thing that fascinates me, I don't know if anyone, the artwork called pointillism, does anyone know what I'm talking about? It's where there's lots and lots of small dots. And if you go close up to it, all you can see, I did try to get something off the internet for Tom to project on the screen that showed this, but I couldn't find anything, so I'll have to describe what I'm talking about. The pictures are big pictures, and they're made up of lots and lots of small dots. When you go close up to them, it just looks like lots and lots of small coloured dots. As you gradually walk back, I thought I was going to trip over then, the picture emerges. And that's quite a good example of what we're talking about this morning. The small dots are the law. We mustn't ignore the small dots of the law, but every now and again, we also need to step back and look at the whole picture, look at the big picture, to make sure that our small dots are in the right place. St. Francis of Assisi, he's the guy that was associated with animals, isn't he, a lot? But he also devoted his life to bringing the gospel to the poor of Italy. One day, he and another of his brother monks entered a small village in Umbria to preach the gospel. They began by chatting to the villagers and listening to their stories and how poor they were and stories of their hardship. And then they went with them, helped them working in the fields and in the stables until the day was nearly over. When it was time to go, the other monk was really concerned and he said to St. Francis, "Did we not come here to preach the gospel?" St. Francis turned to him and said, "If these people haven't heard the gospel today, then reading to them from the Bible will not make any difference." Now, I'm going to give you a bit of a difficult challenge now, and I hope you don't think I'm being morbid, but if you were to meet with an accident on the way home from this service, I hope no one does, what would the eulogy at your funeral be like? What would people remember about you? I'm going to give you a few moments to reflect on that, and I'd like you to be honest with yourself. No sugarcoating, but to be honest with yourself. And then after you've thought about that, I'd like you to think if that's how you'd really like to be remembered, or if there's something missing that perhaps you'd like people to say that, if you're honest with yourself, they couldn't truly say at the moment, and if so, how you can go about changing that. So just give you a few moments to reflect on that. So having thought about, it's quite an interesting thing to do, isn't it? When I read about what I was going to do, I did it myself, and it's quite a challenge to ourselves, isn't it? Quite an interesting thing to think of. Although it's not a very pleasant thing to think of, I have to say. I'm going to finish by reading an excerpt from a sermon which Martin Luther King preached at Ebenezer Baptist Church on the 4th of February 1968, which was 2 months before he was assassinated. It will tie in with what you've just done if you listen to the words. "Every now and then, I guess we all think realistically about that day when we'll be victimised with what is life's final common denominator. That's something we call death. We all think about it. And every now and then, I think about my own death, and I think about my own funeral. But I don't think of it in a morbid sense. Every now and then, I ask myself, what is it that I would want said? And I leave the word to you this morning. If any of you were around when I have to meet my day, I don't want a long funeral. And if you get somebody to deliver the eulogy, tell them not to talk too long. Every now and then, I wonder what I want them to say. Tell them not to mention that I had a Nobel Peace Prize. That isn't important. Tell them not to mention that I have 300 or 400 other awards. They're not important. Tell them not to mention where I went to school. I'd like somebody to mention that day that Martin Luther King tried to give his life serving others. I'd like for somebody to say that day that Martin Luther King tried to love people. I want you to say that day that I tried to be right on the war question. I want you to be able to say that day that I tried to feed the hungry. And I want you to be able to say that day that I did try in my life to clothe those who were naked. I want you to say on that day that I did try to visit those who were in prison, and that I tried to love and serve humanity. Yes, if you want to say that I was a drum major, say that I was a drum major for justice. Say that I was a drum major for peace, a drum major for righteousness. And all of the other shallow things will not matter. I won't have any money to leave behind. I won't have fine and luxurious things to leave behind. I just want to leave a committed life behind. And that's all I want to say. If I can help somebody as I pass along, if I can cheer somebody with a word or song, if I can show somebody he's travelling wrong, then my living will not be in vain. If I can do my duty as a Christian ought, if I can bring salvation to a world overwrought, if I can spread the message as the Master taught, then my living will not be in vain. That's quite powerful words, that, isn't it?